I think as we begin to understand more about this code in our bodies, it is a code that is found in all carbon-based life. That's life as we know it. And I think as we have the opportunity to sample, if we find evidence of life on some of the other worlds that we're looking at right now, and if it is carbon-based life, it's going to be very interesting to see if the code reads the same in those genetic sequences as it does in the ones that we have here in our world.
How did we break this code?
This is it's an ongoing project, George. I'll be very clear with the listeners. We are nowhere near complete.
Okay.
And I think perhaps the way to get into this topic is if I can invite the listeners to think about the cells in our bodies from a very, very different perspective, different than the way we were taught in school and the way our children are being taught today. When we look at a cell, we see this encapsulated membrane holding this sticky, gooey, protoplasmic stuff. And that certainly is one way of seeing the cells in our bodies. I'm going to invite the listeners just for a little while. If we can think of every cell in our bodies as a literal library, and the average body, we're told, has about 50 trillion cells, so we've got about 50 trillion libraries in our bodies. Each cell, we're told, science tells us that every one of our cells has 23 pairs or 46 chromosomes. If we can think of those chromosomes as books within the library,
mm-hmm.
And those chromosomes are made of long strands of DNA. If we can think of those long strands as chapters within the books, and the long strands of DNA are made of little sequences, little sections that are called genes. And if we can think of those genes as sentences and paragraphs within the chapters, we're beginning to develop a very good metaphor for precisely the way this information is encoded into our cells. And just as at the beginning of nearly every book, before the first chapter, there is a foreword or an introduction, we appear to have the equivalent of that in our cells as well. And that introduction is the subject of the book, The God Code, and it's what we know for sure exists in our cells right now. So the message in our cells appears to exist in many, many, many layers. All of the layers have... only one layer has been translated and decoded. Now that we know how it works, the algorithms are being developed to take this to the next level. So tonight we can talk about this very first layer. And the fact that this message is there is mind-boggling beyond belief. What the message says takes that to an even greater magnitude. And that's what I'd like to talk about for this next little segment here.
Now, though you say this is an ongoing research project, how did we find the beginnings of this message?
There is there's a story, George, about an archaeologist. His name is Heinrich Schliemann, who read the book The Iliad by Homer.
Right.
That was believed to be a metaphor by the scholars of his time. No one took it seriously, so they didn't think that Troy ever existed. And Schliemann simply asked the question. He said, what if the book The Iliad is a literal description of this city? What would happen if I interpreted it that way? He did that. He found himself on a mound of earth, and he excavated nine different cities, and on the ninth level, he excavated the gates of the ancient city of Troy, and all he did was follow the instructions that were left by those who had come before him. And I'm using that as an example because in a very similar fashion, what I did was I went into very specific texts, some of the most ancient and mystical, some of them so mystical they're not even well received in Western traditions. I looked at the clues that were left as if they were literal clues and began applying the best science of our time to understand what those clues might have been saying. By crossing those traditional boundaries, it led to the numeric links between the ancient alphabets and the modern way of looking at our world.
Okay, explain that a little bit more for
us. Okay,
the
Western science today tells us that our world, our universe, our world, our bodies is what it is because of an alphabet that we call the periodic table of elements. That everything is what it is because one or some combination of those elements carbon, oxygen, hydrogen, zinc, boron, you know, it goes on and on.
All the way down.
Everything in our world, science says, is what it is because of those elements. The ancients, and I'm going to be very specific here, began looking at ancient biblical Hebrew, and I can talk more later on about why we chose that language. The ancient biblical Hebrew says the same thing, except instead of the periodic table of elements, it says that the universe, our world, and our bodies were created by the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. To a scientist, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Okay.
Unless those letters are actually representing something else. Well, with all of the elements in our periodic table, we have a name and we have numbers associated with those names. And in a similar fashion, George, a lot of listeners may or may not be aware of this. As I began the research, I was surprised to find out that every alphabet, every language known today, has with it, in addition to the letters, a hidden or a secret or a mystical number that is associated with that letter. It's always been there. It's never changed. The numbers are precise. They're very specific. They're very mysterious in terms of where they come from.
You mean if A has a number, B has a number?
Precisely. In the Hebrew language, one of the reasons that we chose biblical Hebrew, it is one of the, it's not the oldest language by any stretch of the imagination. Sumerian, Babylonian, Egyptian hieroglyphic, much older. However, the Hebrew, biblical Hebrews, is one of the oldest continuously used languages in human history, and it is a very stable language. It hasn't changed much in the last, at least the last 3,000 years, and probably the last 5,000 years.
All right.
So the numbers, there have always been very specific numbers linked to the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. We don't know where they came from. We haven't, and they haven't changed. Well, the what took 12 years to understand, and I'll make this very short and we'll cut right to the chase, is that the elements of the periodic table, there are many different numbers, at least 17 different characteristics that describe the elements. We call them atomic weight, heat of fusion, electronegativity, all these technical sounding numbers. One and only one of the numbers that describes our modern periodic table also is precisely the number that's linked to the ancient Hebrew alphabet. And it's a very interesting characteristic. It's called atomic mass. The atomic mass number of the periodic table of elements, very specific elements, is the number that is also the number for those for the Hebrew letters.
How did you tie the two in together?
Well, what I did was I went into some of the most ancient Hebrew texts. Specifically, there is a very mystical text. It's called the Sefer Yetzirah. When people talk about the Kabbalah, there are three key texts in the Kabbalah. Two of them are very well known. They're called the Zohar and the Midrash. One of them has been translated into English very, very few times because it is so mystical, and it is called the Sefer Yetzirah, or literally the Book of Creation. And it's a relatively short book, about 1,000 lines long. As if an observer were watching, God create the universe and the world and our bodies,